You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. Today is going to be part two in our series on Damon Lindelof as a movie writer, where we look at his first feature writing movie thingy called Cowboys and Aliens. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we're joined by John Mills from Words with Nerds. How's it going, John?
It's going very well. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us. So tell people what the Words with Nerds podcast is.
Words with Nerds is a podcast that is looking at the nerd / geek experience through the lens of pop culture. And that's just a really highfalutin way of saying that my buddy Craig and I sit down and drink a few beers and argue with each other about different touchstones in how it relates to being a nerd or geek, but not in a pejorative sense, in a sense that we're proud to be those things.
Yeah, that sounds like pretty much most of our interactions, except, you know, we put a microphone there and just said, there, now we're working.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We figured we might as well do something productive with the time instead of just arguing like Barney and Wade Boggs.
Yeah, those guys. The dinosaur, right? Barney?
Pitt the Elder.
Wade Boggs was on The Simpsons.
Yes. Yeah, he had a guest, and Barney knocked him out because they were arguing about who was the greatest British prime minister. Was it Lord Palmerston or Pitt the Elder? And that's basically the way that all of the...
It's Palmerston. So there. Yeah. I'm on Barney's side.
No. You're crazy. It's Pitt the Elder.
That guy had it coming.
Yeah, I was listening to the episode where you guys were talking about, some inconsistencies with the prequel trilogy. And some of the explanations that you gave were stuff that I had never thought of, but, you know, problems which I had with the prequels were suddenly explained away.
That's what I try to be. I try to be that out-of-the-box thinker, as Donald Trump might say, and try to come up with the innovative. You know, I the way I like to think of it is, and I know how weird this would sound, but I think my brain waves are somewhere on Lucas's level. And so I can sort of sit down and look at his stuff and I'm going to be like, okay, all right, I see what you were going for, George, and I'll give you credit for that. So I tend to be, I readily admit, I'm much more forgiving. Like I'm probably the only person that has in fact seen everything he's directed from beginning to finish and actually enjoyed it.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you there. Well, we'll see. We'll see whether or not your skills will be put to the test today. But before we do that, since this is a Star Trek podcast, what's your relationship with Star Trek?
Okay, I grew up in a very Trek friendly environment. My older cousin Rob and my uncle John were huge Trekkies. My uncle John still is. And when they came out with the reboot, that's not a reboot, in 2009, we went together on opening night because that it's his thing. Star Wars was always quote unquote my thing coming up, and Star Trek was always his. And my uncle's sort of like an older brother, father figure sort. So anyway, there was that emotional attachment. The first Star Trek movie I ever saw in the movie theater was actually Star Trek V. And I was the only person that walked out of that movie theater and said, no, that wasn't bad. I kind of liked it. And I think they were very gentle with me because I was the youngest of the crew. They're like, I don't know, really, you might want to go back and rewatch those. So, of course, like everybody else, I went back and I rewatched Wrath of Khan, fell in love with it. And I didn't really pick up on Next Generation until around season 3. And of course, Best of Both Worlds, like whoa, that was like, wow, they can do this.
Yeah. It's good timing.
I know. I came in at just the right time.
Yeah.
And then I would say that Deep Space Nine sealed my love for it, to be honest with you. Because I love that show. I know that this is sacrilege on some level to some people, but it's my favorite Star Trek television show.
No, you're not here. Not here. We are all about the Deep Space Nine on this show, so you're in friendly territory. So, since we're doing a series here on Damon Lindelof, I guess sort of to bridge the gap between this topic and the next, what were your thoughts as a Star Trek fan on J.J. Abrams' movie, Star Trek 09?
I actually really enjoyed it. It wasn't perfect, but what movie really is?
Die Hard.
That's a fair counter argument. Die Hard is pretty darn perfect.
Yeah, that's all.
Last of the Mohicans is, too.
Perhaps. Wrath of Khan is also pretty perfect.
But to bring it back, I felt that Star Trek 2009 was a good movie. It was a worthwhile effort, and it was good enough for me to be willing to see the next one in the movie theater.
All right, cool.
That's a filmic triumph. Good enough to keep me around.
You know what? Ask the makers of The Matrix how I felt after the second one of that series.
So, since this is a series on Damon Lindelof, and you know, we're going to be talking about his movie career. You know, Lindelof has done stuff, a lot of stuff beyond that. Do you have any thoughts on Lindelof? Have you seen, you know, Lost or Prometheus or any of those things?
I was a diehard Lostie. I stayed with that show through thick and thin, all the way to the end, and. I always play the outlier. I loved the ending, which I know that a lot of people didn't. I remember getting together with some fellow Losties at work the morning after, or actually the afternoon after, for lunch. And I was about the only person that was like, I get it. Yeah, totally. Cool. But Lindelof as a whole, like taking his whole body of work, Lost is beginning to feel like an exception and not the rule, because I think that he was working with some really talented people, Carlton Cuse, Brian Burke, who were, you know, I think that he works better in committee than he does when he's given a little bit more free rein on things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, he needs somebody to keep him in check a lot of times. At least that's his body of work. I'm sure he's a lovely person, but his body of work leads me to believe that he needs somebody to steer him, so far as those things go.
So, getting into Cowboys and Aliens today, I guess I'll just give a brief synopsis of the movie and correct me if I'm
wrong. You're going to give a synopsis of Cowboys and Aliens?
Sure, because, you know, for those people who haven't seen it.
Why should they escape the suffering?
I'm just curious as to what the synopsis is going to be, because I imagine we could call Favreau and he'd be like, give me 4 days and I'll come up with a synopsis.
I guess the short version is that there's a bunch of cowboys doing their cowboy thing and aliens show up and hijinks ensue, right? I mean, that's pretty much
yeah.
I mean, Daniel Craig plays a guy who has amnesia and has a weird piece of technology on his wrist.
Yes. He plays that character in all the video games.
Mm-hmm. And
like,
he,
all the video games.
Right.
It's almost the exact same story as the beginning of Fallout New Vegas. Guy wakes up, mysterious thing on his arm.
And through, you know, the town being in sort of an uproar over his appearance, since he is a wanted man, aliens show up, start stealing people, and now he needs to team up with Harrison Ford to get them back. So anything you guys want to add to the synopsis of Cowboys and Aliens?
Harrison Ford isn't just a guy walking around. He's like the local lawman.
No, he's not the local lawman.
He's the local big shot.
He's a local jerk.
Yeah.
Right.
He's the token jerk character, and it was supposed to be a big... I remember actually getting kind of excited about the fact. I was like, wow, Harrison Ford's playing a kind of a bad guy. Okay, that's not really his form. I'm kind of interested. Like, he doesn't like to spread his wings anymore. And so I was actually really legitimately interested to say, okay, here's a cool concept. Looks like it's going to be a good action movie, and Harrison Ford's in it. Like, this is old hat to him, but he's playing an unexpected type of character. Like, that was an exciting sell for me. That's basically what put my butt in the seat.
Well, it's true. I mean, you look at the pedigree of this movie and the concept and everything, and you see the trailer and you think, this is going to be amazing. Like, I remember, like, being like when word started coming out of Comic-Con that they were doing, like, the world premiere there, and basically all of these geeks who went to Comic-Con were getting to see this movie a week early and everything. I got really sort of jealous and excited, and I couldn't wait to see it. And what were your thoughts when you finally did see it?
Bitter disappointment.
That seems to be the common experience. Would you agree, Max?
I think this is laughable. I think it's laughable that people could possibly be disappointed by this movie.
Why?
Because when people went to see this movie, they came out and their review was like, there's like really nothing to it. It's basically just like an excuse to have like a bunch of cowboys shooting at a bunch of aliens in the Old West. And I was like, did you read the title?
But, I mean, for me, from my perspective, I've gotten in that, like, I don't even pay attention to the reviews. And I think that it's entering that dicey area where I read stuff like that and like, oh, there's really not much to it. And I completely disregarded it because I think as whatever you want to say, geeks, nerds, Trekkers, Star Wars fans, whatever, we've gotten the chip on our shoulder of we're so used to what we like being sort of broken down that we just ignore it. We're like, okay, you know what? You're just doing your thing. This is sort of like the critic shtick to tear apart what we like because it's too plebeian or something like that. So, like, I understand where you're coming from, where you're saying, you know, how could you be surprised that you're going to be disappointed given everything that was involved in its marketing, its title, and the reviews? But I think that we all sort of continually walk into the trap because we don't know who to trust anymore in terms of, like, whether it's good or not. Does that make sense?
I agree. I think that reasoning is very solid in other contexts. I think that when you see, you know, the guy that made Iron Man is making a movie called Cowboys and Aliens, you go like, that could be good. And then you go, wait, he did also direct Zathura.
No, see, to me, it wasn't that. To me, it's like, yeah, I totally agree with what you were saying, but we were in a position where we didn't know who to trust. We knew that we could trust all the people.
I don't think that anyone is. No one should feel betrayed here.
I don't think that there's
nobody involved in this movie like pretended that this was going to be like a deep and rewarding film watching experience.
I think at the very least we were promised that it would be an extraordinarily entertaining and somewhat different film watching experience. You know, I mean, if you look at the fact that it was Jon Favreau coming right off of Iron Man and Iron Man 2, you look at that trailer. I mean, a lot of the stuff which actually sort of got me excited was the fact that he had like his Iron Man crew on board. He had, you know, Matty Libby shooting it. He had Sam Rockwell, you know, showing up in it, you know, and then not to mention the fact that you've got, you know, Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford. And Harrison Ford's movies these days are so few and far between that each one of those seems precious. You know, like he's maybe the only person now who, you know, if I see that he's acting in a movie, I'll be like, I'm going to go see that. You know, I mean, even if I don't necessarily think it's going to be good, I'll see it just because I feel like there's something to the fact that he would agree to do this movie.
Yes, and I would also say that he's getting to that age now where you see his name and the appearances are rare, and I know that this will sound morbid, but you start to wonder, could this be the last one?
Yeah.
You know, like, could this be his final movie? And so I want to go see it in the theater before everybody says, oh, you should have seen that because he's, you know, forgive me for saying it, it's dead 6 months later.
Yeah. But then also, you know, the idea that, you know, I mean, I remember when I first heard the title Cowboys and Aliens, and I was like, that sounds ridiculous, you know, and then you hear them talk about it and you see the trailer and everything and you're like, they're doing this straight up for real. And there's something really about that. There's no reason why you can't do a movie which takes place in the present day about alien invasion and make it serious and dramatic. I mean, you could compare it to, like, let's say Independence Day, which obviously is not serious and dramatic, but it's not Men in Black. You know what I mean? When you think about it, there's no reason why you can't do that in the Old West.
Absolutely no reason why you can't do that in the Old West. So, although, if you were doing that in the Old West, you'd assume that whatever story you'd come up with would inform the title rather than the setting informing the title.
That could be, but at the same time, I don't know, there's something about titling your movie Cowboys and Aliens, which in a sense is sort of an inside joke.
And I think that the importance here is that I'm not saying that no one should ever have made this movie, because I don't think that at all. I don't think that making this movie was an error. I think expecting it to be more than the title was an error, because it is not promising you anything else. And you know what? You're pointing out, like, you know, Jon Favreau and Matthew Libby and a whole bunch of the members of the cast. None of those people are the people making the story.
It's one of those things where I don't think anybody was expecting anything more than the title. You know, like, let's say when I go to Wendy's or McDonald's or whatever, I know what I'm getting is fast food. I know that it's not top shelf. But I expect the burger to be hot and to taste the way I want it to. And I expect the fries to be good, and I expect the soda not to be flat. So if I go there and those are my expectations and it still doesn't meet those expectations, then it becomes a failure.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's a good analogy.
But if you extend that analogy and you order a Cowboys and Aliens and they give you a bun with Cowboys and Aliens in it, then you go, well, that is what I asked for. Come to think of it now, not quite sure why I asked for that, because it's kind of a ridiculous thing to order.
No, I mean, I think that it's perfectly reasonable. All
right, fine.
There's no reason why you can't make a good movie. I mean, like, even all the way up to seeing the trailers and everything, there's no reason why you can't make a really good movie that about cowboys and aliens.
Oh, yes, yes. There is no reason why you cannot make a really good movie about specific cowboys and aliens. There is a lot. There are many, many, many reasons why you cannot make a good movie about, you know, cowboys, and also, you know, aliens. And that's my point.
Like,
the platonic ideal of this movie is a bunch of cowboys and a bunch of aliens are shooting at each other, and at the end, it's one side pretty much wins. That's the platonic ideal.
Well, you know, actually, to break it down, if they'd been closer to that basic ideal, instead of trying to shoehorn in some of these subplots that they had, some of the subplots that they had are what made the movie go wrong. Like the whole relationship Harrison Ford had with his son and his not son, and was not only predictable, it was poorly executed. The Olivia Wilde subplot, that was so predictable. And I'm also going to say that the thing that completely made me tune out of the movie while watching it was they couldn't pull the trigger on the dog. They had this big, terrifying monster going around, destroying people, cattle, towns. You know, like it's like the Chicken Heart from Bill Cosby. It's just destroying everything. But the dog got away. And if you don't, like, at that point, I understood that they weren't taking it seriously either. And I was like, okay, guys, if we're not going to do this for real, I'm out. And again, getting back to the pedigree, all of the people involved in this movie, right, the whole should have been even greater than the sum of its parts. But not even the sum of its parts worked. And you had so many people on it that had demonstrated talent. And, you know, I won't lie, Lindelof, because of his ties to Lost, seeing his connection to the movie, I said, oh, well, all right, we got an innovative thinker on the crew here. We got somebody who's going to think things through and make it at least a bit intriguing. And instead, all they did was just package up a bunch of cliches and then deliver them poorly. And that was that was what leads to the disappointment. And that's where it leads to the sort of the, if you're not going to take it seriously, I'm not either sort of comment is, even if you're delivering bottom level entertainment, there should be at least evidence that you're trying to deliver some level of quality.
And they weren't trying to deliver bottom level entertainment. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, Cowboys and Aliens, you know, naming it that kind of hurt it, because you could have the same exact movie with a different title and people wouldn't be like, you know, saying what you're saying, where it's like, it's Cowboys and Aliens. What do you think you're going to get? Because, I mean, there's no reason why it can't be like a serious movie. And they went to great lengths in order to ensure that.
You keep saying there's no reason why. And every time you say that, I'm like, there are a lot of reasons why.
Well, I can't. I don't really see them any more than Iron Man, you know, or whatever. I mean,
well, actually, Mike, you've mentioned Iron Man before. I'll say it's the difference between Iron Man and Iron Man 2, right? Iron Man, it delivers what you expected. There wasn't anything particularly stellar about it, but you were entertained for by and large. It gave you a guy in a big suit that could shoot things out of his hands and blah, 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 stuff that was completely implausible, but it stayed true within its own constructed reality. And then you have Iron Man 2, where you justifiably come in and say, well, this should be it. You know, this should be pretty good. This should be, you know, at least, you know, on the same level as the first one. And Iron Man 2 went wrong on the same level that Cowboys and Aliens went wrong. So maybe Lindelof had less to do with Cowboys and Aliens' failure, because the one consistent variable in those two equations is Favreau. So maybe he's the more inconsistent one.
That's my feeling. Favreau is the issue here. And it's not because Favreau is bad at things. It's because Favreau will make a movie that whereas Iron Man is about a guy sort of redeeming himself, feeling like he has this enormous burden of guilt and he's got to do something about that or it'll kill him. So he actually puts his entire life and his lifestyle and his actual existence on the line in order to undo that guilt. Iron Man 2 is about a guy who's got, like, a terminal illness because he can't stop doing this thing to assuage his guilt that theoretically, at this point, he should already feel pretty good about assuaging, because he's managed to eliminate a lot of the stuff that he did. And he's done a lot of other good things. So Iron Man 2 has this really, like half-assed little, you know, pathetic motivation for the character. And the same thing is true in Cowboys and Aliens. And I can ask you a question. What was the character's motivation for doing things? Curiosity?
What they were trying for was Daniel Craig was supposed to be on a quest of self-discovery. And I think that all the subplots they added in were executed so poorly that it muddied the waters. They became so concerned with adding things that instead of having that focus, which if I read you right, I mean, it needed that focus. It needed to have a main character that had a clearly discernible goal.
And
it didn't.
That's a fundamental thing, though, because like the mechanism of having like an amnesiac protagonist makes a humongous amount of sense for video games, because it allows the player to receive exposition at their own rate. And in a movie, a character who has no memory, whose primary motivation is to figure out who he is, self-discovery is an excellent motivation for a character if that self-discovery is profound. But if your self-discovery is essentially, like, literally learning your name and address, then the entire story is more or less hiding phone books.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's a fair comment. And what's interesting is we talk about Iron Man and Cowboys and Aliens, and Favreau is the constant there. But then, you know, just to project out to Prometheus suffered the same way, and Lindelof is the variable between those two. Okay. So maybe Cowboys and Aliens is a perfect storm of two very inconsistent people coming together and just, collectively pooping the bed.
Well, I think earlier you said that, because of Lost Connection, like Lindelof is, you know, a creative thinker, and he is. But in, like the next sentence, you said, like, somebody who thinks things through. I don't think he's that. I think Lindelof is a very creative thinker. I think he's very innovative, and he comes up with a lot of good ideas. But I do not think that he, you know, sits down and you know, maps out the beginning and end of these ideas. He doesn't, you know, like, generate the fractal pattern that will result from every one of these weird ideas he has. Because, frankly, that's just crazy. And when you're working on a movie, you go like, I've got a creative idea. Let's put it in the movie. I don't know exactly what it means. It's weird.
Okay.
Though.
Okay. I can see that criticism.
I don't think that's necessarily criticism. I think I'm saying like Lindelof is the type of person who comes up with good ideas, and when you are working on a TV show, you can, you know, have this weird idea and not really know what it's about, and then explore it and then figure out what it's about. Whereas in a movie, you come up with a weird idea, and at the end of the movie, the audience goes, I don't understand. Why are they all white? And why are they so big? And why are they all dudes? Are there not female engineers? I think there would be.
So kind of spinning off of that, you know, since this is about Damon Lindelof, do you see Damon Lindelof's touch in Cowboys and Aliens? Can you watch that movie and point to specific elements, and even if it's just sort of like subliminally, and say like, okay, I can kind of see this is from the guy who did Lost. I can kind of see, you know, this is from the guy who did Prometheus. Or is it not? Do you not feel that it's indicative of his other work?
I see his fingerprint very specifically on the scene where I think they're in. It's a ship that's out in the middle of the desert or something that's all wrecked up.
Yeah.
And the little boy, they have some sort of tender moment scene. And that to me has Lindelof all over it. It has his feel. It has his sort of flow and his sort of dialogue pattern. I would also say that a lot of the Olivia Wilde character came across to me as very call back to Lost again, Kate-like, in her sort of indiscernible motivation for caring about the main character.
I like that you find Lindelof's signature in the absence of something. Yeah, you don't quite know what's up with her. I can see Lindelof in that.
Yeah. Sadly enough, the guy's track record speaks to that.
Well,
it does.
I agree. I think that's dead out. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that does make sense. I think mostly of like scene structure and like how they're relating to the story at hand and the way that they like. There's very early on. There's like this threat, and then they're like, "Should we follow up on that threat?" And people argue about following up on it, and I'm like, "Come on, guys, this is like every episode of Lost."
Yeah. Yeah.
But, should we go fight the others?
Replace,
no.
Replace the smoke monster with something that ate people. To speak to your point, like, I think on a TV show, you have that flexibility to do that. And that's why he could get away with it on Lost. And I think that Lindelof is cruising on the rep with that. He's cruising on that. And it's a question of time. He's got to hit something. He's not going to get full credit for the first Star Trek, even though he had something to do with it. This next Star Trek, in my opinion, makes or breaks Lindelof's career. Abrams can withstand it if Into Darkness fails on some level, but Lindelof cannot. I think after Cowboys and Aliens, Prometheus, and if he has another big noticeable misfire with Into Darkness, I think Lindelof's career winds up becoming in jeopardy as a writer. At least he might be able to still be a producer, but as a writer, he's in jeopardy.
Yeah, I think the problem with the whole scenario is the nature of blame when it comes to movies and such. People are, you know, willing to throw random characters from the production of a film under various hypothetical buses, and I'm always mystified and frustrated by that nature, because it seems to me that the process of making a film is so complicated that if you're going to blame someone, you should blame almost everyone.
And as far as like Lindelof's career, you know, being in jeopardy or whatever, I think that everything that you said is true. Though I wouldn't necessarily apply that to Star Trek, since there are so many people involved with that. I think that you could say everything that you said is true for Lindelof in regards to Tomorrowland, which he's writing himself and is very nice, you know. So we shall see.
I always forget about that because I figured Tomorrowland was like the cover story, like Blue Harvest for the next Star Wars movie.
Yeah, you know,
because it sounded like it. I was like, oh, Tomorrowland. Okay, yeah, that's like Blue Harvest. And then they sort of pulled the rug out from underneath me. I was like, oh, he's not writing it. Okay, cool.
Frankly, I don't think people like Lindelof belong in movies. I think he should be doing TV. He's more of a thinker than a showman. I mean, you could say a lot of things about Lost. It was not a spectacle type show. They pretty much had five or six spectacle episodes, and that's over six seasons. So I think that him in feature films is a terrible idea. We're going to get the absolute worst of him. We're going to get the middle episodes. We're going to get the season finales of Lost and nothing else. Okay. That's not what we want.
All right. Well, any final thoughts on Cowboys and Aliens, John?
That I think that anybody that has listened to this that hasn't seen the film, do yourself a favor and don't take our word for it that it's not worth it.
What about you, Max?
I find it weird that you're warning people from seeing the movie because, like, this is like, it's not even close to bad. It's just soulless, like a zombie.
That's
and I think you know, like, if you feel the need to put down every zombie, I mean, that's just a lot of killing.
Well, but to me, like, that's
call me Rick.
that's the problem that I have.
Call me Carl.
but in terms of like why not to recommend Cowboys and Aliens, I mean, that is the thing about it, is it's not really a tremendously bad movie. It's just a tremendously nothing movie. Yeah. You know, and what you will find, what you will get from this movie is not like a hatred from it or anything. It's just a supreme disappointment.
Well, no, I mean, that's the thing,
like, in the lack of stuff.
That's why when you say, like, you know, don't see the movie, I'm like, no. See the movie.
I mean, but don't
get a bunch of people over and go like, all right, everybody, this movie is terrible. Let's watch it, because you're going to be sitting there going like, it's not really so bad that we can make fun of it and laugh.
It's a nothing movie. I would not recommend the movie just because I don't think it's worth watching.
Right,
but I wouldn't say stay away. I wouldn't.
But that's
say that
why.
Either,
so. That's why. If you want to have background noise while you're doing the dishes, put Cowboys and Aliens on, because when you look at the screen, you'll be like, oh.
That's a really well-edited action sequence, and
there's Olivia Wilde walking around.
Mm-hmm.
None of this is bad.
Well,
and you can follow it if you're only listening like every 5 minutes for 30 seconds.
All right.
to me, that's a bad movie.
Yeah, it is a bad movie. But so, John, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all over the interwebs, but the best place to find me is on Twitter, Kessel Junkie, KESSELJUNKIE. You can also find me at Words with Nerds, which is nerdswords.podbean.com. And you can also find me at my blog, which will be resurrected shortly, KesselJunkie.com.
Yeah, the fact that the name of the show is Words with Nerds and the website is
Nerds Words.
And if you listen to the episode that we have prior to this, where we tease this episode,
Mike spends,
you will see that it confuses me.
127 hours trying to figure out what the order of words is.
So, but yes, nerdswords.podbean.com, correct?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Okay, cool. Well, as always, you can find us at our other show at commentarytrackstars.com, or you can find us on Twitter at comtrackstars, or you can email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com. Thanks a lot for joining us, John. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast.
Yeah, and we will be back next week to talk about Damon Lindelof's other movie, Prometheus.